Blog Talk Radio.
Have I told you lately that I love you? Have I told you lately that I care? Yeah. Have I told you lately that you are wonderful? You're magnificent and so much more. Have I told you lately that I love you? Have I told you lately you're my king? Have I told you lately that you are number one? You're magnificent and so much more.
So I stand in the presence of your glory.
Welcome to the Dr. Maxine Bryant Show. I'm excited to be with you this afternoon. I am your host, Dr. Maxine Bryant. And as always, we're going to open up with a poetic excerpt following that song that was played. That's my good friend Sheila Ray Charles, the late, great Sheila Ray Charles, one of the children of Ray Charles. Sheila was dear and near to me, and I insisted on being able to open the show with her song in tribute to her memory. Again, welcome. You are listening to the Dr. Maxine Bryant Show. Now, the show segment that we're into right now is called Simply Groove Talk. And here's an excerpt from a poem. I alone am responsible for my groove. I can't, I shouldn't, and I won't depend on you to give me my groove. It's my groove. I lost it. And I alone must get it back. You see, it was mine to begin with. I gave it up. I surrendered my groove in the never-ending negotiation of the American dream. Well, forget the American dream. I want my groove back. And I must search deep within myself to find it. Welcome to the Dr. Maxine Bryant Show. And so for this segment, we're going to have as our guest Dr. Dana Taylor. Now, Dr. Dana Taylor she resides in Savannah, Georgia, in the Low Country. She's known across the country, really, as being an interpreter for the deaf and hard of hearing. She is also a psychotherapist. She's a nationally certified counselor and a professional relationship counselor. So, Dr. Dana Taylor, how are you?
I am wonderful, Dr. Bryant. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
What
a pleasure.
Yes, and you're live and in living color in the studio. Yes, you are. So, today's segment, as we begin to talk about relationships being a groove stealer, I want the audience to find out a little bit about you. Now, before they do that, I want to describe, particularly for our new listeners, what groove is. Well, you see, a few years ago, I wrote a book, and the book is entitled, I Want My Groove Back, God's Way. And I realized that true groove is being rooted and grounded in the Word of God. Now, as we live our life, we come up on things that knock us off our square. They get in our way. They are distractors. They are what I would call groove stealers. And so today, that's what Dr. Dana Taylor and I are going to talk about, groove stealers. So, Dr. Taylor, what makes you an expert when it comes to relationships, since that's going to be our focus today?
Well, first of all, I believe that all of us are experts in relationships.
All right.
Because we've all had relationships from birth until the present. I have been a psychotherapist for years. I have been a pastoral counselor for over 20 years. I see a lot of couples. I see a lot of couples in marriage counseling. I do individual counseling. And I get to hear what makes a relationship and what doesn't make a relationship.
Awesome, awesome. And that's exactly what we're going to be focusing on today, Dr. Taylor. So in your work as being a pastoral counselor, psychotherapist, coach even of a sort. What are some of the things that creep up in relationships that make them toxic or not work? And not just male-female relationships or couples, romantic kinds of things, but I think we can find ourselves in toxic relationships with just about anybody. Am I right?
You're correct. In fact, sometimes we're in toxic relationships with ourselves. So the relationship begins on the relationship that we have with our own heart and our own mind and what we tell ourselves and what we put out there. And then it extends to other people in our world. For example, the relationship that we have at work, the relationship we have with our friends. All of that extends to what one decides to put out in the world to other people.
So what kind of relationship should we have with ourselves? Since I'm saying that groove really begins with being rooted and grounded with yourself, with your relationship with God. So how does one get in good relationship with oneself so that that relationship isn't toxic?
One of the questions that I believe that individuals should ask themselves, would I be my own friend? So if a person had to step out of themselves and look back, would you decide to be your own friend? Would you be someone that you would want to be around? And again, all of this goes back to knowing yourself, to know thyself. And once one knows thyself, being comfortable with oneself, then you can extend to have relationships with other people.
So since we're talking about relationships as groove stealers, what would a toxic relationship with oneself look like?
A toxic relationship can sometimes look as if one is not at peace. If a person is not at peace or comfortable with being with themselves, some people do not feel comfortable even being with themselves. They may choose to have a lot of people around them, or they may choose to say negative things to themselves. And,
yeah.
and everyone does that. I mean, there's times you look in the mirror and like, oh, I don't like that, or I don't feel smart about that. So it really goes back to self-talk. And what the self-talk is, but a lot of times we are shaped by other people.
Yes.
And so it's important as one grows to know who they are for themselves instead of knowing who other people believe they should be.
Okay. So when we're forming ourselves, we're getting into our groove, because I believe God created us to be in groove.
Yes.
Right. I think that's, you know, when we were first created, there was no groove stealers around. And next week, or a couple of weeks from now, we're going to be talking about those groove imitators. But we lose sight of that. We like you said, we need to fill the void with voices from other people, things that we do, we crowd our lives, all of those type of things. So when we begin to be in relationship with other people, sometimes I think it's not even easy to recognize that those people are groove stealers, Dana.
Yes, absolutely. And it happens. It happens. It depends on what a person's needs are. You know, I like referring to the book, The Five Love Languages, by Gary Chapman, and how he talks about the things that people need to feel loved.
Wow.
So a lot of times in those things, he has the five things, affection, which is, you know, just touch.
Right.
Words of affirmation.
Yes. Communication, yeah.
Gifts. Service. Time. And so really, when someone looks at what do I want in a relationship and what do I need in a relationship and how do I feel, sometimes the groove stealer happens if a person mistakes who or what they need.
Okay. Well, thank you. Hold that thought. Right now, we're ready for a word from one of our sponsors.
Thank you, Dr. Bryant. As all of you know, Dr. Bryant has written several very interesting books. The first one is iwantmygrooveback.com. And another one, she's written several, but the other one we want to speak about is Truth Be Told, which is a collection of poetry that Dr. Bryant has written. Those are available on her mygrooveback.com, her website. And if you're interested in hosting a grooveback party or a conference in your community, it's easy. We would love to talk with you about it. You can invite your friends and family to your home or have a larger party at your church or club. Send the Grooveback Doctor, Dr. Bryant, an email at www.mygrooveback.com or call 612-876-7964 to discuss setting up your party. And back to you, Dr. Bryant.
Thank you, Pat. Pat Maltz, the manager. She used to be the manager for Sheila Ray Charles, and now she is my manager. So we greatly appreciate you, Pat. Yes. So,
thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. To continue the conversation with Dr. Dana Taylor, we were talking about relationships that turn toxic. And another way of looking at these relationships are relationships that are difficult. And a lot of it, Dr. Taylor, I believe, stems from not being at peace with oneself. You mentioned that. What else is involved with those difficult relationships or those toxic relationships?
At times, we, and I include myself as well, must be very mindful with our words.
Mm.
And in having relationship, be mindful about how a word could help or hurt. And sometimes relationships become toxic because of the words, and sometimes because of not understanding what the other person needs and being sensitive to their needs.
But can you give us an example? A lot of people in the audience may be trying to figure out, we're talking about some rather abstract concepts here. Can you think of an example that will bring it home for our audience where a relationship may have started out really, really good, and something happened?
Yes.
Any examples you can share?
Well, there's one example, and it's a story that somebody told me about. There was a caveman, and the caveman, his hair was very matted. He was holding a club. And when you look at him, you might think, yuck. You know,
okay.
You may think you see the flies flying around him.
Mm.
But then the camera pulls back some, and you see that a saber-toothed tiger is getting ready to bite him.
Oh, my. Okay.
And he has the club. So then you start to feel a little compassion for him.
Mm.
And then the camera pans back even more, and you see that a woman and a child are up against the wall.
Mm.
And he has decided to sacrifice himself.
Wow.
So then you feel another way. So that story is very significant because sometimes we just need to pan back and look and not judge.
Wow.
And know when something is good for us
mm.
and when something is not.
But how do you
and
know?
The way that you know is having peace about it.
Mm.
Knowing, does this relationship, is it good for me? Because many times I would see people go on their first date, and on their first date they may say, and this is just another kind of relationship, but on their first date they would say, oh, I hope that he or she likes me.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
Why not ask yourself, will I like that person?
Wow.
So sometimes there's such a need
yes.
to be cared about and to love, mm. and everybody needs and wants love.
Okay.
But the key is to look at how we want to be loved, how we need to be loved, and if we have peace within that.
Okay.
Even our relationships at work. Sometimes when people are going in a career situation, and this is goes along with groove stealers and relationships, and one is so eager to interview, not knowing that they can interview the person who's interviewing them.
Hello, right.
Is that someone who I want to be around in my midst?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, as you said earlier, when we get so busy and we're so active, sometimes we don't stop and reflect on if this is something that is purposeful.
Mm-hmm. Good, good.
Is it purposeful?
Okay.
But the way that you know, because you're asking again, how do you know?
Yeah.
What did your gut say?
Mm-hmm.
We often, given that spirit,
okay.
to listen to what's going on inside of you. Okay. How do you feel when you're around the person? Do you feel comfortable? Do you feel safe? Do you feel cared about? And that goes on with every relationship. Is there trust?
Mm.
And if there's something within our spirit that says something just ain't right.
Pay attention.
Pay attention.
Wow. Wow. Okay, well, let's stop here. I think we're ready for another word from our sponsor.
Perfect. Are you ready for the 2017 Grooveback Conference in Savannah, Georgia? Dr. Bryant has put together with her team a fabulous agenda. It has a continental breakfast, interesting speakers throughout the morning, and a light lunch, and it's over at 12:30. It's going to be at Kingdom Life Christian Fellowship in Savannah. You can call 470-344-9313 for more information, or you can register at mygrooveback.com. We hope to see you there.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you. As a matter of fact, Dr. Dana, you are going to be one of the presenters at the conference, right?
Absolutely. And it's my pleasure to be
here. I'm excited.
There.
I'm excited. Yes. So you're going to be talking about decompressing. Am
yes.
I correct? So talk a little bit about that, because what is that?
Well, decompressing goes along with the relationship thing.
Mm.
Decompressing is actually letting go.
Wow.
And many times as we are so busy,
mm-hmm.
we don't stop and just listen.
Okay.
And decompressing is finding ways to relieve the stress in our lives and really resetting.
Okay.
So that could be through breathing.
Mm.
I will be teaching tapping techniques.
Tapping techniques?
Tapping
so what
techniques.
Are tapping techniques?
Tapping
technique?
Is when you're actually touching parts of your body,
right.
just like your wrist and your temple, in order to reset yourself.
Wow.
And we'll be doing breathing exercises, too.
Okay.
And really, it's just centering oneself, getting back in touch with oneself.
Getting
that
one groove back.
Getting your groove back.
Yes.
And getting
yes.
that relationship back with yourself.
I love it. So I was in a conversation not too long ago, as a matter of fact, Sunday, with a group of women whose children are now adults. And we were talking about the strains of parenting adult children and how for many particular mothers, that relationship has become a groove stealer.
Mm.
Why?
Possibly because we still see that little baby even when that baby is 25 and 30 and 40.
Okay.
So it's just changing with the ebb and flow of relationships,
mm.
the ages and stages.
Mm.
So we know that when a child is small, we have to guide them, hold their hand.
Mm-hmm.
When they go through their teenage years, we have to let go a little bit so they could grow and learn.
Okay.
In their 20s, the relationship changes so that you still are a guide, but also you allow that person to know who they are.
Let me ask you this, because it kind of falls under groove stealers. I've talked to at least four or five women, perhaps, who have adult children, and we have noticed that there are times when our young adult children find it very easy to distance themselves or cut off communication. And so I was talking to my son about that, and he thought that maybe because in the age of social media, it is so easy to unfriend people and create that distance that may carry on or over into actual relationships where an adult child may find it real easy to disconnect. So can you speak to that a bit?
Well, many times when we look at ages and stages of different people in the 20s, those who are in their 20s are usually trying to find who they are. They're trying to find out who they are to other people. They're trying to find who they are to themselves. And sometimes they may disconnect from those closer to them because they actually want to know who they are without their parents' eyes.
Mm.
Without, because many times as we're growing, we are who someone wants us to be.
Hmm.
So at that age and stage, they're usually looking to find out, who am I, and does it really match with who my parents said I am?
And so to do that successfully,
sometimes
there needs
they
to
pull
be some
back.
Distance.
There's some distance.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Dr. Dana, we have a caller on the line.
Oh,
caller.
Excellent.
Would you please state your question?
Well, this caller is from area code 408. So 408, can you have a question?
Hi, yes, I want to say that I'm really enjoying your show, Dr. Maxine Bryant, and I'm enjoying the commercial breaks that Patricia is giving us, rife with information. I have a question for Dr. Dana. I'm enjoying her information and the dialogue, and I had several points that I wanted to make, but one in particular, if you could explain the tapping therapy. I once interviewed a woman on my show. I have a show called The Woman at the Well, and Dr. Maxine Bryant has been a guest on my show. And I interviewed a woman in my first season. She was having that type of therapy done because of different issues that she had been through. And so when you mentioned that, it struck a chord because at that time, that was my first time hearing it, and it just took me aback. And so for you to mention it, it's okay, I can get an explanation about this from a therapeutic sense and not from the client side.
Yes, thank you for your question, and thank you for calling in. Tapping is similar to acupuncture, except there's no puncturing going on. It's closer to acupressure. And what one does is identify whatever situation they have on a scale from 0 to 10, how does it feel on the negative side. So once that number is identified, for example, a person may have a number of 8 in where they're feeling, then usually when I work with my clients with that, they take a deep breath in, and then they start to tap the top of their head, their palms open, they tap their temple, they tap under their eyes, they tap their nose, they tap collarbone, they tap under their arm, they tap, and then they tap their hand like a karate chop. This could take up to 5 minutes, but the purpose of it is our bodies, without getting very technical for this, our bodies react to the pressure that we're putting on it, but the positive pressure of resetting our bodies. And once that is reset, take another deep breath and ask, how bad is the flu at this moment? And surprisingly, many times they go down to 3.
And it was one on like a 5, 8 or a 9?
It was an 8 initially. It would go down, and you continue doing it. One or 0.
Dr. Bryant, can we ask the caller to mute their phone because we're getting some feedback?
Okay, thank you. Caller, can you mute your phone? I was wondering what that sounds.
Yes, I can. Thank you for your response. Have a great show.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Dana, Dr. Dana Taylor, for sharing that. That is so very interesting in terms of how our body, the physiology of our body and how it responds to touch to bring us down.
Yes, the decompress.
Yeah.
And there's actually a book, and I'm sorry I don't know the author's name, but there is a book called The Tapping Solution.
Okay.
And in that book, he explains the technique in details as far as how it does with our body physiologically and neurologically.
Okay. Okay. So we've talked about romantic relationships and the need to I think what you're basically saying, what that the 5 love language is saying, we need to learn how to love people how they want to be loved.
And how they need to be loved.
How they need to be loved. Yes. And that's really hard when they don't even know. So you kind of got as a trial and error kind of thing. And then we were talking about people who with adult children, and ways of bringing, you know, of bringing our heightened anxiety, is that what you would call it, down? And I think that happens when we're in toxic relationships. And it can also be when you're in a work environment that's toxic. I had the opportunity to work in a toxic environment when I first moved to Savannah. And, oh my goodness, you could feel the tension. You could feel the toxicity of it all. Short of leaving a job, what would someone do?
What one would do, it's all individual, because it would depend on what a person needs and if they really need that position. But one way is changing your mind. And I'm sure that most people have worked in a toxic work environment, in that type of relationship. And many times, in order to survive, it is changing our minds and knowing that we are worthy. A lot of times people are in a place where they're not celebrated, they're tolerated. And when that situation happens, we have choices.
Okay.
And the choice we have is to change our mind, change our location, change what we do with that, and change how we think about it.
You allude to something very, very important, and I just said this recently. We cannot change another person.
Absolutely.
And that is not our responsibility.
Absolutely.
So the only person in a relationship or an environment that we have the control to change is ourselves.
Absolutely.
So either our own perspective, which is that mind that you were talking about, or our location, get away, or change or impact the environment somehow with your presence.
And you know, when I say all of this, it's not to minimize, because relationships, environment, the relationship with ourselves, it's painful sometimes.
Yeah.
It's painful, and being able to take care of ourselves is most important.
Awesome.
You know, even in a work relationship where it may be toxic, take care of yourself. And you take care of yourself by just affirming that you're there for a purpose.
Right.
That what you're doing is positive. And sometimes others may not appreciate all that you do, but you appreciate you.
Absolutely. We're getting ready to wrap up our segment. I believe that the book that you mentioned is called, is it The Tapping Solution?
Correct.
Okay, by Nick Ortner.
Wonderful.
Awesome. My producer is
Thank you so much.
We want to be the show that motivates, inspires, and informs,
Absolutely.
And educates you.
Thank you.
So in the tradition of Groove Talk, we're going to end with what I call a groove inspiration, Dr. Taylor. It's actually a part of a poem, and I didn't write this poem. It's called The Autobiography in 5 Short Chapters. And what I hope it does is to help our listening audience to realize that they do have choices. We don't have to continue doing the same thing, because when we do, we'll continue getting the same results. Is that right,
Absolutely.
Dr.
Absolutely. And there's one question to always ask yourself.
What is that?
What for?
What for? Absolutely. So listen to these words as we close this segment. The autobiography, which is my story, and each of us have this story, in 5 short chapters. It's by Portia Nelson. Chapter number 1. I walk down the street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I fall in. I'm lost. I'm helpless. It isn't my fault, but it takes forever to find a way out. Chapter number 2. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I pretend I don't see it. I fall in again. I can't believe I'm in the same place. But it isn't my fault. It takes me a long time to get out. Chapter number 3. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I see it. I know it's there. I fall in. It's a habit. My eyes are open. I know where I am. It is my fault. I get out immediately. Chapter number 4. I walk
down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I walk around it. Chapter number 5, I walk down a different street. Thank you, Dr. Taylor, for teaching us today how to walk down a different street.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You are so, so welcome. So, this has been another segment of Groove Talk on the Dr. Maxine Bryant Show. Thank you very much. Do we have a closing word from our sponsors? I guess not. Okay. Thank you, Dr. Taylor.
And I wish everyone peace.
Yes. Thank you very much. We need that as we continue to get rooted and grounded in ourselves through the Word of God. I look forward to seeing your face in the place on next Saturday, November the 4th, at the 2017 Groove Back Conference. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good day. Have a good day.
Thank you so much.
Listening audience, you have heard from Dr. Dana Taylor. We are so glad that she was able to come and join us today. And now we're getting ready to transition into When Is My Debt Paid? With Daryl Bailey. Daryl, are you on?
Yes, I am. How you doing today?
I am good, Daryl. I am good. Thank you very much, sir. It's been a couple of weeks since I last talked to you.
Yes, it has. It's been a little bit of time.
I know, right? Right? But yes, I'm glad to have you on the show once and again today. So today we plan to educate our listening audience on the criminal justice system. And so very briefly, I'm going to give you an opportunity to just very briefly introduce yourself and why you're on this segment of the show. Can you tell those, particularly those who've not been with us before, what your role is on our show?
Well, I am an ex-offender who was incarcerated for 11 and a half years. I am been free and an entrepreneur for the last 11 and a half years now. I was incarcerated for being kind of in the wrong place at the wrong time is what most people would like to call that phrase, but you know, Dr. Maxine will give you a different terminology later. That's definitely pretty much my story. Anything I missed, Dr. Maxine, you think?
I'm sorry. Did you say? I couldn't hear the last thing you said.
I said, do you think there's anything I missed there?
Yeah, that's it. That's good. And so what we want our listening audience to know is that when we talk about the criminal justice system in the United States of America, it's really comprised of three primary components. The first component is the police. You enter the system by way of the police. Usually there's an investigation into some type of wrongdoing or perceived crime, alleged crime. There's a warrant put out for the person's arrest. An arrest takes place. And the person goes to booking where they're fingerprinted and their mugshot, that's what we call it, the mugshot is taken. The second component of the criminal justice system is comprised of the courts. The court system or component begins with what's called the first appearance, and that's where the person is formally apprised of the charges that are now against them. In some states, we have a grand jury that meets and they hear only from the prosecution. I want to talk about that a little bit later. And they come back with a verdict of indictment, if you will. In some states, they don't have a grand jury, but the judge will listen to the evidence against the defendant and determine if an indictment is in order based upon what we call probable cause. Finally, after all of that, an arraignment happens, and the arraignment is when the final charges that this person is being faced with are read to the person. And at that point, they have an option to what we call plea out, to take a plea bargain, or at least they are informed formally of what's going to happen if they go forward with the trial in terms of the charges against them. The trial is usually a jury by their peers, or it can be a bench trial where it's just the judge listening to the evidence, both by the defendant and the person who's been accused and the prosecution against the person. And finally, if the person is convicted or found guilty of the crime, then there's a sentencing phase. The third component of the criminal justice system in these states is called corrections, and that may be probation, and that can be in lieu of a sentence. It can be house arrest, which is community corrections, a halfway house. It can be comprised of electronic monitoring. And if the person was sentenced to a correctional facility, when they get out, then they would be a part of the community corrections called parole. So, Daryl, what I'd like for you to do is to walk us through your involvement with the criminal justice process. Let's start with the police section. What was that involvement for you? What was that experience for you?
The experience was kind of like on the – pretty much like what you see on television, where you always have the good guy and the bad guy, or in my case, the good guy and a nice lady and a mean guy is what I had. So they played the good cop, bad cop role all the time. They definitely going to do that to you. I went through there, and they want you to do a lot of things for them. They offer you a lot of stuff. They say a lot of different things. Oh, yeah, you can just do this. You can do that. They make it sound very simple. But, it's very nonchalant. Like, I really don't, like a person who's never experienced dealing with the officer, you go in as a child raised to believe that the officer is here to protect you.
Wow.
In your mind, when you're talking to this person, you instantly believe that you're talking to somebody that's here to help you.
Yeah.
You know, so you walk in there with a bit of trust off the rip if you don't if you've never experienced this. So you're kind of in there, and they just kind of use that trust to get you to say what they want you to say. And once they're done with you, they take your words and they manipulate it to how they need it to get what they need from you. And that's what it's all about, the conviction, and that's what it's about, you know. And it's just unfortunate that it has to be that way, but unfortunately, that's what it was for me. That's how it was.
Was there a warrant put out for your arrest?
Yeah, I had a secret indictment, which was basically meant that the sheriff's department had it, so a regular police officer didn't see the warrant. Only the sheriff's department saw it. That means they were going to come and get me. You know, so once I was tipped off and then I had that warrant out, and I ended up going to my lawyer and kind of talked to my lawyer about what I heard was going on and proceeded that way with my lawyer's supervision.
So you had a private attorney?
Yes.
And let me stop here. What we do know, no offense to anyone who works for the public attorney's office, but what we know is that public attorneys who are public servants and they are paid by the state generally are overworked and underpaid and often don't provide the quality of counsel that you get when you hire your own attorney. So, Daryl, you were in a better shape, believe it or not, because you were able to hire your own attorney. So did you turn yourself in?
Yes, I did.
And you were booked?
Yeah.
You went through the booking process?
Yes, I was.
What was that process like for you, that part of it?
It was kind of surreal. Again, it was like it was happening because I turned myself in, there was not a hostile situation at all. So, like, no animosity, no roughing up, you know, like a lot of stuff you see roughing up and things. But because I kind of willfully walked in the door, I was just handled as if, like, yeah, step right over here, do this, do that. And before long, I'm getting handed a bedroll, you know. And I didn't even realize it was kind of just happened right before your eyes. And you just
wow.
Like, It's surreal. It's crazy.
We're going to stop here. We have a word from our sponsor.
Yes, we do, and we're not on mute, so that works really well. If you're interested in hearing more about what Dr. Bryant has to say about unaddressed childhood trauma, she will be speaking at the Women's and Girls in Georgia Conference on November 11th in Athens, Georgia. This will be a very informative program. They have a number of interesting speakers. And, of course, Dr. Bryant will lead the section on unaddressed childhood trauma. To register for this conference, go to wagg.uga.edu and get yourself signed up so you can learn more about juvenile justice and women in the system. Thank you, Dr. Bryant.
Thank you, Pat. And Daryl, before we're finished today, I hope to be able to have a conversation with you about unaddressed childhood trauma. But let's continue where we left off at. You had just explained to us and described, rather, your experience with the first component of the criminal justice process in the United States, that dealing with the police. There was an investigation, you found out there was a warrant out for your arrest, you turned yourself in, and you went through the daunting booking process, and it all seemed very surreal. Now, the next component of the process is the court. Can you please tell us what your first appearance was like in front of, I don't know, in Ohio, if you had a magistrate or if you appeared before a judge?
Yeah, I appeared before a judge.
Okay.
So, first appearance was, I was very nervous. Of course, I've never even thought I'd be in this situation, first of all. But once I ended up in that situation, I got in front of the judge, and it was like I was talking to it was very robotic. I went at this very first stage of arraignment when they setting a bond for me and things of that nature. It was very routine and robotic. How do you agree? You know, it was, you know, like I'm about to do 100 of these in a row, so I'm just going to ask you these questions. You answer them. He hits the gavel and sends you on. So that was my very first experience. It was like, whoa, this is what a judge is like. Okay. So I'm trying to think, that's my vision. Okay, that's the judge. Okay, I got it. So now, the next time I go to court, it's at my real, you know, judge. Now I've been arraigned. I guess that was arraignment court when you get sent to and they set a judge for your case and all of that. So you get a judge. So I went to my judge, and this was a different meeting. So I thought I was going to get a robot, and I got a very more informal questioning. Looking, you know, face to face in the eye. So, you know, that was that. And at that point, my lawyers did all the talking from there on. So that was the first encounter. And, you know, you have a lot of pre-trials is what there are before you actually get to your trial.
So in Ohio, do they have a grand jury?
Yes, they do.
So did the grand jury meet on your case?
The grand jury meets before they are able to put out that warrant. So what they actually do is they send the evidence off to the grand jury to see if it's enough to indict. And then once they have enough evidence to indict, they then send the indictment papers down. And then once you get the indictment papers down, they put the search warrant. Either you're in there already, they have you, or they'll do it before. It can happen both ways. Your indictment papers can be ready when you get there sometime. So
let's talk about this for a moment, because I forgot. When I teach it so often, you know, things just kind of become second nature. And I just realized we didn't talk about the bail process. Was there a bail available for you? A bail bond?
Yeah.
What was your bail? Do you remember?
My first bail bond was $500,000 cash, no surety.
Oh, my goodness. Wait a minute. $500,000. Okay, so each state does bail differently. many states, you have a bondsman, and you give them 10% of whatever the bail is, and that's like a surety that you will show up in court, and so you don't have to sit in jail until your court date. The judge can deny bail, and that means the person will remain in custody until the court date. In some liberal places like Las Vegas, people can put up cars or houses or some type of tangible thing that they own as a part of bail. So, Daryl, tell us what that process was like for you.
Well, for me, my bail was $500,000. That's how much money had to be put up at first. So I literally had to, swallow the bullet that I couldn't bail out. And what ended up happening was I sat in there in the county for 30 days, then went before the judge again and asked for a bond reduction. And then I was able to bond out. So there are ways of getting a bond, but most ways of getting your bond reduced is sitting in prison or in jail, the county.
And you know what? I'm so glad you made that error, actually. There is a difference between jail and prison. So before I educate our audience, can you tell them from your perspective what the difference is between a jail and a prison?
A jail is pretty much what happens when you that's the first place you go, jail.
Okay.
You go to jail, if you get the police pull you over, you're drunk driving, they're going to take you to jail. Generally your city jail, the precinct, or your downtown county, which is the biggest precinct downtown jail. So they're going to take you to one of those places, and once they get there, it's either you're going to something small enough to where they can let you know, hey, you just had a disorderly conduct, and they just had you sit in the drunk tank overnight and let you out and go home like you see on TV. That with a ticket, of course, and a fine, but
right. You
will. That can happen. All the way up to them transferring you down to the county, you getting a case, having to bond out and all that as well. So you have that. The county is still considered jail.
Right.
Prison, on the other hand, is once you have been found guilty of a crime and they have sentenced you to time. That's when you have prison. You've been found guilty and been sentenced to a time.
Absolutely. So for the listening audience, usually if you've been convicted of a minor crime and the sentence is 1 year or less, you could find yourself doing that in a county jail. If it's more than a year and it's a felony and you're being sentenced to a period of custody or incarceration, you're going to go to prison. And so Daryl's going to talk a little bit more about that in a moment. So, Daryl, you had a private attorney, and your case went to trial, right? Or did you take a plea?
I actually took a plea bargain myself.
Oh, you did. So can you inform us about that, what that was like?
Yes. What happened was I was, again, as I stated before, I had a paid attorney, and it's no offense to a public defender, but you get better options when you have an attorney that works for you that you pay.
Yeah.
And they really will work for you. So what happened for me was I had three options. I could have a bench trial.
Mm-hmm.
They gave me three choices when I had my case. They gave me three offers, three deals. I had an involuntary manslaughter. So I was offered the 10 to 25, which has the option to go to parole 6 years and 8 months to the parole board on that 10 years, which gave me an option to get out at that time if they granted my release.
Okay.
That was that option. The other option was 10 flat years. I could sign and say, hey, I'm going to go in and do 10 flat years and get out in 10 years from today. The third option was a bench trial, which was say, hey, I'm saying yes, I'm no contest to this involuntary manslaughter, and I'm going to allow the judge, to pick my destiny. So I was forced with those three decisions, knowing what this case was looking like in my lawyer. So that's what they gave me my option. I chose the 10 to 25 with the option to parole out in 6 years and 8 months.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Great. So we're going to stop here and hear a word from our sponsors, and then I want to hear about the whole sentencing process for you when you accepted that deal, and then kind of what happened next. So let's hear a word from our sponsors.
All right.
Interested in having Dr. Maxine Davis address your conference or conduct workshops at your event? Bryant Educational Seminars and Training delivers the best training design and delivery available. And you are able to learn more about Bryant Education Seminars and Training at bestchoiceconsulting.com, which is Dr. Bryant's website. And we would love to hear from you and love to talk about having her come and address your conference and share on these many subjects of juvenile justice that she is so well versed in. So please give us a call, check out the website, send us an email. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you. So, Daryl, back to you. So you're standing there, you're realizing what your three options are. You chose to do the bench trial. I'm sorry. Is that what you chose? No, you chose
the
10 to 25.
The 10 to 25.
Okay.
Yes.
So when you made that choice, can you describe the feeling you felt knowing that you were going to prison?
That was very difficult for me because at that time in my life, I was a very young man. I was 19 years old, and I was just really finding myself as a man, period. I didn't know who I was as a man at that time yet. So
okay.
I was so shocked. All I could do was basically hear the words of encouragement, you know, that you hear from your parents or your mother, your father. You hear stuff, your uncles, and all in your head, don't give up, you know, you can do it, you know, be a man, do what you got to do, you know. Everything you hear, you know, all the cliches, is like kind of all I had to kind of like keep pushing me forward, like, you know, I guess so many things I could go on and on. But, yeah, that was a tough thing. That was a very tough time. I could just say one thing to you that will make you understand that. I remember once I said to myself, well, they say the truth will set you free. So I'm going to tell the truth, you know, and that's what I was sitting here trying to tell the truth. So I'm waiting for my set free coming, and, you know, and that's what it was. But in my whole situation, you know, everything – you know, you got to pay for the things that you do in life. That's what it comes down to.
Okay. Now, you said you took 10 to 25. We know from previous conversations that you actually served 11 years, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So did you go up for parole at 10 years?
Actually, what happened, the reason why I took the 10 years and 25, 10 to 25 is because it gave me an option for parole at 6 years and 8 months in.
Okay.
At that time, I went before the parole board. At that time, they gave me 10 more years.
Oh, shut up. Okay, so why? Oh, my goodness. Why?
That's the biggest question I could ask them to this day, which is why the parole board has been nullified. They're no more, thank goodness, because they were really playing with people's lives for no reason at all. It was just, I don't know. I really couldn't tell you. I couldn't tell you. I wish I could answer you. I really don't know why. I literally asked. I mean, I got to go on and on about that, but I'm sure there's more segments for that.
Wow. Well, let me educate the audience again, because you mentioned something. The federal government was actually the first entity to do away with the parole board. under the federal government, now you do automatic 85% of your sentence. States began to follow suit, so many states no longer have parole boards. Georgia does. We still have a parole board that decides the fate of people when they've done a significant part of their time and it's time for them to be considered for parole. And parole, as Daryl said, comes after you have been incarcerated. You do not get on parole until after you've done some amount of your time. So, wow, Daryl, you went up at six years, and you served another, 5 years before you went before the parole board again? Or how did that happen?
I actually went up. They gave me 10 more years. Then I appealed that. My appeal was granted. So I was so excited because I thought I was going to, I got a better chance of they realized they made a mistake. So, they're coming back to see me. You know, I'm all hyped up and I'm telling everybody, I got my appeal granted. I'm going back. So I went back. They said, we made a mistake. And they turned it to 8 years. So,
oh, my.
So
you were all elated. First of all, you were down and out. You got your paroles denied, and you got 10 more years. And then you can find out. You get the appeal. Your appeal is granted. You're all hype. Your emotions are all, I got this, only to go back down. I mean, your emotions come down. It's like a up and down, a yo-yo with your emotions.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Trust me. It's the reason why, to this day, now I do not get excited about much people say. I wait till I see it happen.
Life taught you that. So one time, I think it was the very first time we talked, briefly, you talked about your experience of going into prison and hearing those doors slam behind you, knowing that you now were going to be, shut away from family and friends for a long time. Can you share a little bit about what that was like?
Well, that was a very hard time because once you get in them, it's a mind process that they take you through. They take you through they really want to mold your mind, and it's kind of humiliating, I guess, humiliating, whatever you want to call it. They shave your head, they make you strip down. That's after you get into prison now. Now you're in prison. And they're going to shave your head, they're going to knock your, everything you got taken away from you and give you something different and, here's your life, go ahead on out here now. And they close that door and it's clank, you can't get out, you can't do anything until they let you back out, and you just kind of stuck. And I have no option to do anything other than be stuck. And you look to the left and you got a guy sitting here in this bed next to you that you don't even know. You guys are in it's a toilet, a little sink, and this bunk bed, and you and this guy that you've never seen in your life. Mm. And it's like both of you guys are emotionally going through something right now. You're both getting taken out of your comfort zone and locked next to each other in this little cell. And now I'm realizing that this is really real. I stand in a window and I look out the window, and I look and I'm trying to look down the range and see what other people are doing. I want to see if they feel what I feel. I want to see if they're nervous, if they're worried. You read the door on the doggone door. So many people write so many different things on those doors. You start reading the things that you're sitting there. You don't have anything else to do. You're just looking at the wall. So you're reading it, and you're reading the stuff people've engraved, and some of the stains, and some of the things that make you. So it's very hard. I mean, you're shocked. It doesn't even hit you until you just kind of lay there. So until you wake up, the following morning, and you open your eyes, and you say, "Man, this is really happening." You're really. It's a really lost situation. It's really bad.
One of the things that came to my mind as I'm listening to you, and we need to wrap up, is a workshop that I developed for Blacks in Criminal Justice Conference a couple of years ago, and it was Don't Re-Traumatize the Traumatized. And certainly, while Pat talked earlier about a conference I'm getting ready to speak at in a few weeks about early childhood traumatization, what we realize is that many people who are behind bars have experienced some type of trauma, which is a contributing factor to their being incarcerated in the first place, I believe. And then you take this person and you expose them to more trauma going through the system, and then they find themselves behind bars, locked up, experiencing what you just described. I'm traumatized listening to you, okay? But anyway, Daryl, thank you, thank you, thank you. Listen, audience, you have just heard Daryl Bailey of Cleveland, Ohio. He's a highly skilled tradesman in the fields of tool and die, carpentry, and barbering. He is, however, also a person who came out of the Ohio penal system, and he's been sharing his story while we have endeavored to educate you and inform you through this particular show. So, as always, as we conclude with the Dr. Maxine Bryant Show, we're going to leave you with a call to action. This time, my call to action is for those of you who know someone who is incarcerated. I urge you, maintain contact with them, write a letter, send a card, receive their phone calls. They need that human contact. Daryl's already explained how often they're looking at walls. They're reading what was written. It's a very traumatizing experience. They need to hear from you. Thank you for listening to the Dr. Maxine Bryant Show. We will see you again on November the 13th. November the 13th is our next show. Thank you. Have a good evening.